Welcome, 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 my friends. I am really excited to be with you again today on the Minding Wellness Podcast. First, let me share some exciting news. This is the last episode of the Minding Wellness branded podcast. I am actually rebranding, so not leaving, simply shifting just a bit. It will still be the health and wellness space, but the rebrand will be coming up very, very soon. So keep an eye for that. Stay tuned. It's going to be pretty exciting, and I think you're all going to love it. But you will have access to all of the previous Minding Wellness episodes, which I think provide you quite a bit of information and content and valuable insights from an individual wellness perspective. As we move forward, I think you're really going to love the shift that we're going to make. So to kick off the final Minding Wellness episode, I'm thrilled to bring you Shannon Miller. Shannon is a Florida Bar Board Certified attorney specializing in elder law. She practices in Gainesville, Florida, my old stomping grounds. She also leads the Exploitation Injunction Boot Camp, teaching attorneys across the state how to stop exploitation. She's the past president of the Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys and vice chair of the Elder Law section of the Florida Bar. Shannon is a board member for the Life Care Planning Law Firm Association and currently serves on the Florida Joint Public Policy Task Force for the Elderly and Disabled. She has an amazing amount of wisdom in this field, and I love all that we talked about in this episode. It is valuable for so many of us, regardless of what age we might be. If we're not facing some of these concerns right now, we definitely will be soon. So take a listen, save this one, and here we go with Shannon. Amazing. I'm so excited to be here with Shannon Miller of the Miller Elder Law Firm. And we're going to talk all things legal, but don't run away. It will be very understandable and very applicable. It's a little bit of a different spin on what I normally talk about, but it's so, so, so important. And Shannon has just an amazing way of making this accessible and understandable. So please stick around for this entire episode. And before we get started, I want to welcome you, Shannon. I'm really excited to have you.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited. This is such a great program that you've put together for people. So, and it is exciting and new. I mean, I feel like the future is mindfulness and really kind of layering in all the different things like, you know, aging, brain health, all the things that we're dealing with as we start to get to the later parts of our life. So I'm very excited to be a part of it.
100%. And I'm very honored to have you. I always start out my episodes with asking, what does true wellness mean to you? So I would love to know, as an elder law attorney and just an amazing human, what does it mean to you?
Yeah. So this is such a great question. I'm actually also a yoga instructor, and I work pretty hard on my practice as a Wim Hof participant. So to me, wellness is just my daily practices of yoga, meditation, Wim Hof. I do a lot of cold plunging. I'm always interested in learning about neuroplasticity and how to make our brains better and how to apply that in our lives, but also how to bring it to our community and in particular seniors. So for me, being well is about everyday practices that just will make me healthier, make me more attuned to my own body, mind, and spirit, and really just connecting the three of them together and then being able to bring them to my clients. I mean, it's been really a fantastic kind of transition lately into those two different worlds of like the yoga practice coupled with really the elder law practice. And it's been very beautiful to be able to combine the two. So I love it.
I think that's amazing. I've seen some of your yoga like videos and just snippets of you doing that. And I just think it's fantastic. I mean, it's not like we shouldn't expect attorneys to practice yoga, but I feel like that's such a beautiful, holistic, maybe unexpected twist. And so I love it. And I'm excited about the Wim Hof that you're doing as well. So fantastic. Yeah.
Thank you.
I would love to start out with sort of your journey. So what interested you in law, and then specifically what interested you to focus in on elder law?
Sure. So I actually started off when I was in law school. My grandfather had a really bad death, and it was very disturbing to me. My mom wasn't available, so I was the next person on the list who had to go when he was in the ER. And the whole experience of that death event was very traumatic. And I kind of thought to myself, you know, what are we doing? This is not, you know, he would have been very upset. I mean, he had Alzheimer's, and so he suffered a lot towards the end of his life. And really, we didn't have the tools then to really help people understand how to alleviate suffering. And, you know, that extension of life isn't always quality of life. So, you know, since then, it's always been a bit of a passion for me to really try to understand, how can we do this better? How can we start to enter the sunsetting of our lives in a better way? So then, you know, go to law school. I really needed to get some trial practice. So I actually started as a public defender. And then I began doing, you know, criminal defense work. And I joined a small law firm. That's where I got exposed to guardianship and probate practices. And so I started to realize that, you know, we really have this great need for specialization in the field of elder law. So I started to really dig into looking at estate planning, Medicaid planning, probate, guardianship, all of those things that become part of an elder law practice. And then, you know, that rolled along for a while. I opened my own law practice. I had a partner. She then became a judge. So, you know, the evolution of our law firm to the Miller Elder Law Firm now is quite different than it was when we started. We started using something called the life care planning model, which allows us to keep people, you know, kind of in the program of life care planning. It's a year-long program. And then we just do everything for them. They never get a bill. They just basically stay in the program. And that has been really enriching, because what I found is that during the practice of elder law, traditionally, I was just putting out fires. You know, like, people would come to me, they want an estate plan, and we give them a bunch of papers, and then we send them on their way. And then, you know, a year later, they're back and they say, you know, there's an incapacity guardianship. And so I'm putting out that fire. And then we've got the Medicaid planning, because they've run out of money. And so it's like always just putting out fires. So the evolution of this, where I can be with them all the time, you know, what facility should they go to? Really healthcare advocacy. We have elder care coordinators on staff now. So we're really kind of creating a holistic approach to elder law by bringing people in and then just doing whatever they need. And the relationships that we're forming with our clients is totally different than, you know, just meeting somebody for a couple months, coming into their life and exiting. Now we're there like the whole time. And it's just so much better. I mean, the conversations I have with my clients, the information, like what you're doing, you know, the stuff we're putting out there. Like, we have Dr. Oaken coming in, who's going to talk about Parkinson's. He's like a world expert, like just kind of bringing more information to our client base, and also just everyone, just like you're doing, to try and really raise the consciousness about what it looks like to get older, probably get sick, maybe not be able to manage your own financial affairs, and to die. And then also to protect you, you know, like, this problem with exploitation and scams is, you know, epidemic, and it keeps growing. So, you know, we're there on those issues as well. So it's really been quite an evolution. And I feel like, you know, we're at the cusp of creating something for everyone that is just a better way of exiting this world.
Amazing. I think a lot of us can share this life experience of having a sentinel event, usually a family member. For you, your grandfather. For me, it was my father. But I think we experience something, and then we start to question what's happening here. This didn't make sense. I feel like it doesn't make sense. And suddenly, like, that's kind of the door for me, was for me too, is all of a sudden I was curious about everything. Like, none of this makes any sense. And why isn't anybody asking any questions? And why can't we make this better? And yeah. So I feel a lot of similarities there. I also had a grandfather with Alzheimer's, so I completely understand that experience, and it can be very traumatic. And I imagine that the events surrounding his death were very traumatic for you. And I love that you have turned that into just sort of this passion and this holistic approach to law that I don't think many people know even exists. And so I think this is a great conversation.
Yeah. And I think it's the future of elder law. I mean, elder law attorneys in general are very empathetic, and they're kind of doing this practice anyway. They're just not organized, you know, and they don't have elder care coordinators. And those are similar to like geriatric care managers, you know. It's like connecting those two resources together. We are not social workers. Lawyers tend to think that they are, but they are not. They do not have the same skill set, training, background, education. So really, you know, being more intentional about what we do want to provide to clients, I think is the future. And I also think that clients have no idea what they actually need, and they don't know what's coming. Like, they think that they're going to die in their sleep of a heart attack in their own homes, and that that is like a normal thing to happen, when what we know is that it's not. And they also think, you know, they're never going to be exploited because they were very successful in their life and they would never give their money away to a scammer, but then their brains change and they don't have the insight. And so, you know, kind of just doing the education part of this about statistics and how likely it is that all of those things will happen to you, and that you probably will spend some significant time in a nursing home before you die. It's kind of depressing, but at the same time, you know, if we can kind of just realize that these are the facts, and then just create a mechanism for going through that, allowing families to work instead of being caregivers, instead keep them as family. Like, let this experience of the end of life be just as beautiful as any other stage in life. Keep those strong family connections just what they're supposed to be, instead of turning spouses into care providers and children into care providers around the clock. You know, we don't have 24-hour nursing home nurses. Like, they do shift work, right? So it's okay to provide that care sometimes, but also you want to go back to being a spouse sometimes and going back to enjoying time with your loved one. And if they don't have short-term memory, maybe you can talk about some things that, you know, happened a long time ago. Maybe you'll hear some new things, you know. Dementia can be really cool. Like, there are things that happen during that process that can really enrich your life. So there's opportunities here that I think we haven't really tapped into.
Yeah, it's such a different way to look at so many societal norms that we've all just accepted, and limiting beliefs that we've just passed down generation to generation. Like, we don't talk about death, we run from it. And, you know, it's really cool to talk about 401ks and IRAs, but definitely not cool to talk to any kind of an attorney, or even for the work that I do. You know, I'll call you if and when there's a crisis, but otherwise, you know, like, but, and like you, it's not optimal to be reactive and putting out the fires. Although I will jump in the fire as you do. We will jump in the fire. We would rather there not be a fire at all. So,
yeah. We're prepared for the fire. We know the fire is coming, and we have a system in place that this is what we do when there's a fire. It works so much better. And then we have the appropriate players in the appropriate position. Because, you know, I don't know about you, but before I entered into this practice, I didn't know what Medicare was. I didn't know what you would be covered when you get out of a hospital. Like, any of that. Like, you just don't know what you don't know until you have to know it, and then you don't know it.
Right. So, and you realize how little you really didn't know. Yeah,
I know. And you're so unprepared. And like, you know, what about long-term care? Like, what does Medicaid cover? And, you know, what are exempt? I mean, there's just so many things that, you know, people don't know. And then when they're in that crisis event, they don't have time, bandwidth. Like, it's their person, you know, they want to spend the time taking care of their person, but they don't have the tools. So, you know, being prepared and kind of ready for all the options that might happen is such a gift. And, you know, yet, like you said, walking through the time of death. And I always say this, and you know this, Claudia, like, it can be so amazingly beautiful. Mm-hmm. The death event, I have seen some of the most beautiful death events, and so special and bonding. and things that happen during that time when we're not so focused on, you know, medical decision making. You know, if we have this time to really circle up and, you know, what do you want this to look like? It's your decision. We want to create a good death event based on what the patient wants. And then we just gently kind of help people get into those positions where there is peace and comfort. And it really has great potential to be very beautiful.
Yeah, I even felt your energy like move into a more peaceful state. I mean, really, I think that this is all energy, you know, work at the end of the day. We're energetically aligned with the passion and compassion that goes with this work. And it is ultimately, I talk a lot about how I think a lot of the work that many of us do ultimately is providing peace. It's just in different ways. I mean, the reason that many of us buy from Amazon is because it's just more peaceful to sit on our couch and order. Ultimately, we're all seeking peace. Yes. You know, we're everybody's selling peace. So,
yes.
So, yeah. So, okay. I would love to, I really could talk. I really could talk existentially all day long, but I'm trying to be cognizant of what the audience might want to hear. So, right. What? Let's talk a little tangibly. I do want to get to, and we absolutely will get to the exploitation piece because that is mind blowing. And when I went to your presentation, I learned a ton that I still am repeating and sharing from that talk. And so I know that that will be super helpful. Let's just start out with sort of an elementary background of elder law versus estate planning. And if somebody's not really sure how those two go together, just kind of break that down for us.
Sure. I mean, some of the differences between a normal estate plan and an elder law estate plan are that we're going to protect against exploitation. So there's some things that we can do like pre-need consents against exploitation. We can include in like a trust-based plan, something called a Ulysses clause. So if you start to get exploited, there's kind of a lockdown of your assets and a shift to a trustee who's not going to give all your money away, right? So there's some things like that related to exploitation. And then from the other side of this is long-term care planning. So if you have a durable power of attorney that doesn't allow for planning for things that are exempt assets under Medicaid's rules, like personal services contracts or rental income producing property, or something called self-dealing that Medicaid requires us to see in a durable power of attorney, your durable power of attorney may not work if you need to do Medicaid planning. So there's just some things like that, that the elder law estate plan is going to encompass that, you know, the normal estate planner who maybe doesn't work in that area doesn't know, like, why would you need that? Why would you need a self-dealing provision and a durable power of attorney? Well, they're not doing Medicaid planning, so they don't really see the benefit of that. So yes, it's very important to kind of have these things in place. Florida is really good with long-term care coverage under Medicaid. So we don't require spouses to both become impoverished to qualify the sick spouse. And that's huge because that means people don't have to get divorced. It means that we can park some of the assets under the well spouse, you know, and it just feels better. Like, okay, with our sick spouse is going to spend some time in the facility. Medicaid's going to pay for a big chunk of that bill. And then we're going to see, you know, the well spouse who may live another 20 or 30 years after our sick spouse dies, continue to have resources. So it's really, you know, good to talk to somebody who has that kind of experience related to Medicaid when you're doing an estate plan, because there are certain assets that are exempt. Retirement assets are exempt in Florida. So we're going to be telling you, whatever you do, don't dip into your retirement assets, because once you dip in, Medicaid considers that no longer an exempt asset. So, I mean, there's just like little tricks, things like that, that we as elder law attorneys do know. And estate planning attorneys, please don't get me wrong, they do great work. They are fantastic. They've got all kinds of plans related to estate taxes, related to, you know, all kinds of really good things that elder law attorneys are also pretty educated on. But when it comes to Medicaid issues and exploitation protection, that's where we tend to see a few of the deficits.
That makes total sense. Because obviously when my husband and I went through our own planning, we weren't talking about these things in our conversation with our attorney. So that makes complete sense. But it's so necessary, and it's so necessary to understand that differentiation and distinction so people can know where they're at in life and where what they should be seeking. What are some, and I know you've actually done a video about this, and we'll talk later about where people can access all of your helpful videos and webinars. And I will be on the one with Dr. Oaken. I'm like super excited about that one. I was on the one with Star too. So I'm if I can fit it in my day, it's going to happen.
Awesome.
So what are some of the myths and misconceptions? So as people come to you all seeking help, what are some of the common misunderstandings that you continue to see in a pattern over and over and over?
So, I mean, I would say generally people believe that they have to have like 7 cents in their bank accounts to qualify for long-term care Medicaid. That's number one. The other huge myth out there is that, you know, you can move to a Medicare Advantage plan and easily move back to traditional Medicare, which you can move back to traditional Medicare. It's the supplemental plan that you won't be able to get, you know, so it'll be cost prohibitive. So, you know, that's a huge myth. And we know now there's like 52% of the United States has, Medicare Advantage plans. And you know how dangerous a Medicare Advantage plan can be when you get sick. So, you know, that's a huge myth that we often bust right away and try to help people address some of those issues because they are cheaper, but when you need them, they're way more expensive. So, so that's one of the other myths. I would say some of the other myths about exploitation are real. People don't understand that 1 in 5, if you're over the age of 70, will be scammed or exploited in the next year. 20% of the population over 70 will be scammed or exploited in the next year. And the value of your information is on the dark web. Your information's on the dark web already, everybody's. The value of it goes up when you fall victim to a scam or when you engage in communication with anybody who you don't know. They just make more money by selling your information if they can show that you have had a history of communication with a scammer. So, you know, that's where they're trying to find out what's your currency. Like, what can they get you to do if it's a romance scam or an investment scam? Or it is just whatever it is that you're attached to, if they can find out what it is, then they can sell you and craft a bag of goods that will, you know, get you caught. Sometimes it's about grandchildren and being kidnapped or, you know, arrested, you know, all this stuff that they find out about you when you talk to them on the phone. And then they use it against you. And we know that, you know, we're talking about $59.6 billion a year that goes towards scams just in the United States. And that number was $40 billion in 2022. And it was $34.6 billion in 2021. So literally organized crime is getting better and better at figuring out how to scam people. And we have very, very limited tools once the money goes out to recover it. And, you know, I always talk about, you maybe have heard me talk about some of the ones that we've had come through our office. They come to us having lost $7 million, $3 million. We had one the other day, it was 1.5 million. You know, we can't get it back once it goes. We can protect for the future, but we really cannot get it back. And it's just literally heartbreaking because the victim of these crimes doesn't just suffer the financial loss, the humiliating, a result, and the fact that they have no assets left because the scammer will continue to take the money until it's all gone. It often leads to a death event. In fact, every single client we've had that we had to litigate for over a year in these cases created a death event for our victim. Oh. Yeah. And it's like a broken heart, you know, it's like, how did I let this happen? And it's not their fault. Like their brains just changed. It becomes an inability to assess risk and not understanding the difference between the truth and a lie. And then attaching to this delusion that is their currency. It's a romance scam. It's, you know, the investment scam, whatever it is, they attach to that delusion and we can't break them from it. And then all of a sudden that scammer's gone when the money's gone and they're like, oh no. And it's just the saddest thing. It's just heart-wrenching. Yeah.
This is, yeah, I wanted to get into this exploitation thing, not because I want to spread fear and anxiety, because the healthcare just in general can spread fear and anxiety, and then add this layer. And we're just like, you know, what else can we be afraid of? But this is such a reality. Even personally, my mom called me, I don't know, a couple months ago, and was like, somebody just called me and said, you know, this is your grandson. The only reason she didn't continue the conversation is because obviously he would never say this is your grandson, and she would have seen it was his number, but it wouldn't have taken much more, you know, like if they would have said the right stuff. Thankfully now we have a safe word and, you know, we're like smarter, but this is happening. Right. This isn't like somebody else's life. Like this is all of our lives. So talk a little bit about what you're seeing from just a tangible everyday. So you mentioned the you know, relationship, romance situation. So we've got dating apps. So what does this look like in everyday life? Like where are people starting these conversations? How are they getting kind of sucked into this delusion?
Okay. So, you know, first of all, the exploitation and scams, they're different animals, but they're still, the result is that money's stolen from our victim, right? Over half, it's like 53 or 54% of exploitation events, so that's scams and exploitation together, are caused by a family member. So like a lot of times it's an internal problem. And some of the things that we'll see will be like a caregiver. That's also, you know, a non-family member who might kind of enter the fray, or a neighbor, someone from church, can be a dear friend. Whoever starts to see the vulnerability, and usually they're predatory hurt people. So they've done it before. They've had success in the past. One of the big places we see this happen is at funerals. There'll be a targeting of that widow or widower. I've seen 3 of those cases. Dating apps, Millionaire Match is another one where, you know, our lady is really trying to meet someone, and she gets caught up in this kind of romance scam through that. And some of the tricky issues are that we can't really communicate directly with this person. They're using these alternative methods of communication, like WhatsApp, like Telegram, like Facebook Messenger, or they'll use like Millionaire Match messaging to continue to communicate with our person. So it's very tricky for us to then be able to serve them with like an exploitation injunction, right? Because we don't know their name for real. We know it's Tom, the Polish diplomat, you know, but we don't really know who they are. And usually it's more than one person. They've stolen someone's identity. We even have some voice stuff. So we've actually had phone calls, they're done at this third party provider. It's very like, there's no way we're going to be able to trace any of that. So it's challenging for us to get exploitation injunctions or freeze those types of assets in Florida, because we don't know the respondent and we don't know how to serve them through the normal means. We do in the elder law section have some legislation that we proposed this year that we're going to try and implement in the next legislative session that allows us to use the same communication method that the exploiter used. So it's on the forefront. We're trying to be creative and think outside the box. Again, you know, thinking bigger than what the traditional methods have been to deal with these kinds of things, so that we can actually stop some of these assets from going out. We had this situation with a lady. We were getting the guardianship. We were trying to freeze the assets with the bank, and the bank had run out of time under the current statute to hold these assets, even though everyone knew it was fraud. You know, we all knew it. And our victim was like, no, send the money. Because she's got this dude in her ear. And, you know, we got the guardianship. We're sending the court orders over. And literally the day before the court orders got to the bank, they sent the money. And it was $500,000,
wow.
You know, and we're like calling them and they're like, there's nothing we can do. We're out of time. And I'm like, what do you think the exploiter is going to sue you? No.
Wow. There's
money there.
Right. Because the bank even knew it. I mean, like everybody knew, but the person.
Everybody knew.
Wow.
Everybody knew. And so, you know, we've got to stop that. So we put our heads together. Literally, there were these 4 women. We sat down one day. We were actually at a conference and we're like, we've got to figure this out. And we just came up with this new statutory scheme where we're like, look, if you can exploit via these alternative methods of communication, we should be able to serve you that way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whether we know their name or not, we're going to do this affidavit that says, you know, attaches all the information that we can gather. And then the judges are going to be so happy about it. The banks are going to be so happy about it. Who's going to object to it? The exploiter's right. never going to come in, right? So, you know, it's just $60 million a year. We've got to do something different. $60 billion. What am I saying? You know, like it's become an epidemic that is almost becoming acceptable. You know, it's like everybody's been scammed, and that is not okay.
Right.
You know,
it is a strange, like, now it's just expected. Why is this okay?
It's so
and some of the other things that you mentioned in the presentation I was at,
yeah,
with regard to the, and I just kind of want to break this down for people who don't understand this, because you sure. actually enlightened me quite a bit on the, you know, the black market or the dark, what is it
dark
called?
Web.
The dark web.
Yep. Yeah.
So, so I know you've actually seen screens of this. Like you have
yes,
intimate
we've gone
knowledge
in
of
it.
This. So yeah. What is this? What is it? And then what is happening in this world?
Yes. So you can go in, you have to have the appropriate browser, and it's tricky to get. Like we wouldn't be able to get it. Law enforcement finds ways to obtain these browser, you know, to get into the dark web so that you can actually browse. But when they figure out that you're a law enforcement officer, they'll eliminate your ability to access the dark web. But when you're in there, what's really interesting about it is someone's credit card information will be there. They've got their name, they've got their date of birth, they've got their social security number, they've got their credit card number, and it's available for purchase. Right? And they're like, this person's credit limit is $15,000. We're going to sell you this person's information for, you know, $1,000. And they say, you know, even in this one that we were looking at, it says, like, if this account has been closed, we will give you your money back within 30 days. Like, so there's like honor among thieves. It's so
insane.
Crazy.
The emblem of guarantee in the dark web.
But right.
I don't.
Or the, you know, the, if there's other type of identification information, like we have 7.8 hours of communication time documented for this particular person's information, where that's huge for someone purchasing it. And the value of that person's information is so much higher. And I think, Claudia, you were at the event where mm-hmm. the person in the front row was saying, like, I just can tell the exploiters, like,
yeah.
And she's saying that she's on the phone with them, telling them to.
And
to,
that's the problem.
Right. And then she's like, but now I get like 100 calls a day. And I'm like, oh, girl, your information is so valuable because you stay on the phone.
And I went directly to my mom and told her after your talk, because that's how my mom is. I'll tell her, don't answer that call. Yeah, I'm going to tell them to stop calling. No.
Yes. No. Hang
abort
it up.
Abort mission.
Yes. Abort the mission. And the spoofing, which is something where, you know, they can use a website to mask their phone number. So if they know your area code is 352, they go into the spoofing app and they show up with a 352 area code. And a lot of seniors think that those are legitimate phone numbers. They're not. They're spoofed phone numbers. So, you know, they've got so many tools at their disposal. They can make it look like they're calling from, you know, the police. They can make it look like they're calling from the IRS. So yeah, it is really hard. And then the other side of this is the phishing scams. So this is where, you know, people are on email and they get an email and it says, you know, click the link, and it looks very legitimate, except that, you know, in this email, there's some spelling errors, or, you know, it says IRS dot, you know, BBC or something like that, like something unusual. And all of us are like, they're idiots. These scammers are so mm-hmm. stupid. They don't even know how to make a legitimate document look right. No, they want to eliminate you. If you see the error in the, you know, in the draft of the email, they don't want you. They want people whose brains are changing, who are more exploitable, to respond and click the link, because then they're going to get them on the phone and tell them that their computer has a virus, because they already inserted the virus. And they say, we're going to fix your computer. All you have to do is, you know, give us this remote access. Just click this other link for remote access. And then they have your computer, and then they can like make your accounts look like all your money's gone from them. so that then they can say, well, we have all your money. All you have to do is pay us $1,500 and we'll give you your money back. And then, you know, like it just, that's the stuff where the phishing scams lead to additional, and then they'll access your computer, like the audio, and they can also, they can do this in phones too. They can access the video. So even when you change your phone number, they've been hearing what you're changing your phone number to. So, I mean, it's just, you just have to be super careful with who you let in, the links that you click. The phishing scams are really, really dangerous, and they've gotten super sophisticated.
This is all super terrifying. So to turn, to get back to the piece, the reality is you also help with the piece around this topic. So before we wrap up the exploitation part, I don't want to leave on this heightened, like now everybody feels like they need a Xanax. We're going to impart peace without medication. How do you help these people? So families who are like, I don't know how to help my loved one. What can you do for me?
Okay. So one thing that's so easy, and I have no interest in this company, but I love them so much, is the Careful app. And it's Careful with two L's. I know the website because I recommend it so frequently. It's getcareful.org, getcareful.org. So it's two L's at the end of Careful. And what the Careful app does is it allows you to put all of your, you know, bank accounts into the app for monitoring. Okay. Not for freezing. Nobody's going to be able to freeze your accounts. Nobody's going to access your accounts. It's simply monitoring. They have an algorithm that layers on, just like banks do, that tells them if you have not paid a bill, you know, timely, if you've paid a bill twice, if you're sending money to a nefarious recipient, or anything else in their app that says this is a scam. A notification goes out to the trusted contacts that you've named on the app. So if it's children, if it's your friend that you trust, if it's your CPA, you know, whoever it is, like when we have people that come into the life care planning model, we put them all in the Careful app. And then we have a dashboard so that if somebody ends up getting one of those notifications, we get it as well. So we can check in with the client and be like, hey, what are you sending money to Africa for? You know, like what is happening here? And so it's just a notification. It doesn't do anything except raise the first red flag that this may be something that we're heading towards. And it can also help us with creating a successor trustee, potentially in a trust situation, maybe becoming more diligent and recognizing that these are issues that are developing and that our person's brain is changing. They're becoming less able to tell the difference between the truth and a lie. And they're also becoming less able to identify risk. So when somebody comes to the door and says, listen, all you have to do is pay the taxes and we're going to give you this publisher's clearinghouse $1 million. All you have to do is pay $3,500 to transfer the winnings to Florida. There's the tax. It's just $3,500. And then you write that check. You don't have the ability to assess the danger in writing that check. So it just becomes like really, really tricky for people to assess risk when they have that thinning of the cortical insula in the brain. And, you know, I want to talk for just a second, Claudia, about this kind of new thing,
which is
interoception, and it's right up your alley. So interoception, proprioception is like moving through space, your body moving through space, right? When you're exercising, you're moving your hand, that's proprioception. Interoception is your ability to connect with your internal organs. How does this relate to exploitation? Well, I'm going to tell you. What's very interesting about this is they did this unique study at the University of Florida. It came out in May of 2023, where they had people just sit quietly and tap out with their finger without touching your body, just tap out the beating of your heart. And then they had a monitor on these, you know, the researchers were, this was a relatively small group. It's like 3,600 people that they did this with. And they tapped out the beating of their heart. And if their heart beating was tapping out accurately, then those people have interoception, right? So we put them in this category of being able to connect with their internal organs. The people that are unable to connect with their internal organs are put in a different category. They're lacking that interoception. And there, if you go into a group, it's so funny. The elder law attorneys all have it, all have interoception. But then I met with a different group of attorneys like maybe half of them had it. It
really?
Was so
bizarre.
Yeah, it was
and
so.
Is it like not age specific either? Like you, some younger people.
Yes. People with ADHD, like don't have it. Like,
okay.
And I have ADHD, and when I first started, I did not have it, but I've been working on it through the Wim Hof and now I have it. So it's
interesting.
Cool. Yeah. And I believe there's neuroplasticity there. I believe that seniors can create interoception by literally doing the mindfulness every day and trying to center in on your own heartbeat. I mean, that's just anecdotal. That's just what I've seen. The researchers will be like, Shannon, stop saying that. You know, I speak with
there's
the
zero side effects from that. So
right?
You have my full support. This is, you know, my, I don't even want to say argument because there's no reason to argue it. Like what bad could come of that? I don't see any bad coming of that. So it's got my stamp of approval.
Yes. And you know, we know that neuroplasticity is a real thing, even for older.
Absolutely.
So like, why would this not be? So the research is ongoing. We're trying to find ways to create tools to create more interoception because this is what happens with interoception. So in that research study, pretty much, it wasn't all the people, but it was like 90% of the people that had interoception. They were all, the whole group of them were shown videos of actual footage of kidnappings. So this person who was the kidnapper said, you know, I have this person. If you don't provide X number of dollars, then we're going to kill them. Okay. Half of them were lies and half of them were real. So they were all real videos, but some of them actually had kidnapped the person and some of them hadn't. So these were vetted videos that they used in their research where there really was someone lying, a very serious issue. And with 90% of the people that had interoception, they were able to see the liars 90% of the time.
Wow.
The ones who lacked interoception could not. It was like statistically, they were guessing. You know, they were literally guessing which ones were telling the truth and which ones were telling the lie. And so that is really what, you know, Nathan Sprang, who's one of the big researchers from McGill University, and this is his thing. He's like, it's this intuition that gets suppressed when we have a thinning of the cortical insula. And it's like you're looking down the street and you see that there's something bad happening ahead and most of us would turn back. But if you lack that interoception, if you're having that thinning of the cortical insula, you just walk straight ahead into it. Mm-hmm. You don't see the danger. And it's the same. That's what we're learning, is that this interoception, this connection between mind and body, creates this neuroplasticity, maybe creates new pathways in that thinning of the cortical insula that then can allow people to continue to assess risk and understand the difference between the truth and a lie. Like you see the signs, you're like, yeah, this doesn't sound right. If I give you $3,500, you're going to give me $1,000,000. No, I'm not doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, like, so it's very interesting. And I do think that it's the future of aging. And again, you know, we have this idea, oh, we're just going to warehouse people until they die. Like, no, the baby boomers are going to change all that because they really want to live. They have all the money and they're going to start to look for ways to not just wither and die. They're going to look for ways to create better quality of life, to do things like create mindfulness, create interoception. They're going to be cold plunging. They're going to be doing all the things to make the best possible life before they die. That's my.
And I love that you shared that because you did share a little bit of that at the presentation that I was at. And I think what it does, at least for me and probably many others, is gives me a level of empathy for what's actually happening physiologically rather than just an extreme frustration with the individual. Like, why are you making these decisions? This is, you know, like, this is your fault versus, oh, there's actually a physiological change going on. Let me have some grace with this person and put some safeguards into place, which is what you all are helping families do, is realizing this is a reality. And, you know, as we learn more about this and whether and how we can reverse it or utilize the understanding of neuroplasticity to at least make some progress forward. In the meantime, we obviously need some safeguards in place. So,
yeah.
So.
And I would say the Careful app is one tool. The other tool is using their deficits constructively. So what we know about like undue influence and influence. So these scammers that are influencing our victim, they use a mantra. They will repeat the same words or phrases again and again. And that creates the attachment to the delusion. So they use the same language, the same phrasing. We can do the same thing. So, you know, what we'll do with someone who's being unduly influenced, like typically the undue influencer will say, like, your family wants to put you in a nursing home and your family is stealing your money. And those are the two things that are typical for an undue influencer who's like a caregiver trying to enter into your life. And they'll tell you, no matter what, I'll keep you out of the nursing home and I'm going to protect your assets. You should name me as your joint account holder. Very typical scenario. So in those cases, when we get our victim away from the exploiter, which is the key. So using the exploitation injunction, one of the benefits of that is we can ask the court to create a no contact order that basically takes the exploiter out of the, you know, they cannot have any contact even through third parties or any of that. And it's a felony if they violate that court order. So once we do that, we start the mantra, mom, that person, let's call him John. John stole $25,000 from you. We are going to keep you safe. And everybody says the same thing again and again. And what we sometimes will see is a detachment from the delusion and a reattachment to this new scenario. So I know it sounds like, well, you're just unduly influencing the same. And we are.
But yes. With the truth.
Right. I mean, like, with the truth.
And yeah. Keeping our yes. Like you're able to utilize the truth while the person isn't able to distinguish that. So somebody's got to intervene in some way. So yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and then, and it's so interesting because what we see again and again in these exploitation injunction cases is that we do that method, you know, like I'll be coaching the whole family. When you get on the phone with her, this is what you say. And everybody starts doing it. And then we get to the hearing and that exploiter is there saying, she gifted me the money. She wanted me to have it. And then it's like, we've already unwound the attachment. So our victim then is like, no, I did not, you know? And we're like, yeah.
So amazing.
Sometimes that works, but not always.
Not sometimes always.
Are gone. Yeah. Yeah.
This is really very fascinating and such an important conversation. Mostly I love it because while there is fear wrapped up into a lot of these components, because we fear for our aging parents and grandparents, there are so many people and software programs and resources we can use that are accessible. So yes. I love the action steps to like, okay, let's not just sit in the fear and feel like we can't do anything about it. Let's do something right. About it.
Yes.
Which is fantastic.
Yes. And again, these things that we're putting in place cannot create 100% safety. You know, that's the thing. We want people to have independence. We're not going to lock people in a room because they're exploitable. You know, there's going to be risk and we just have to be diligent in watching. It's important to bring family members in when that's happening, even though mom may resist it. Take them to an elder law attorney. You know, take them to somebody who understands exploitability so that you can start to not be the one convincing mom. Instead, this third party is saying, listen, you're going to lose all your money. Let me tell you the 7 stories of people that we have that lost everything, you know, and sometimes that can be an effective way to communicate.
Yeah. Amazing. As we wrap up, so, so helpful. As we wrap up, what I would love is some advice from you on how somebody would go about if they have not hired an elder law attorney, or they have and they aren't happy with them, which has I've also had happen in my with my clients, and then I just send them your way if they're in your area. But how should they go about discerning the right one for them? So what does a search look like?
That's a great question, and of course, you know, word of mouth is always the best. Look at the reviews. Look at the reviews. I mean, it's just like purchasing anything else. Do your research. Make sure that, you know, if they have like a YouTube channel, you go and watch them, listen to what they're saying. Does it jive with you? And just like what we do, feel people's energy. Are they listening to you? Are they, do that initial consult with an open mind that I may or may not hire this person. I'm not just going to hire them because I paid a consult fee. you know, and most elder law attorneys will require a consult fee for things like Medicaid planning, but usually not for estate planning. So, you know, you may get a free stab at it. It does not mean you have to hire them. If there's anything in your intuition that's telling you this is not the right person for you, listen to it. Go to see other people. You know, in most of the jurisdictions across the state, we have a lot of elder law attorneys. It's even better if they're board certified. That means that they really have passed the highest standard for board certification. It's very hard to obtain. There aren't that many attorneys that do it. Not everybody needs to be board certified, but you want people that actually know guardianship, that know what an exploitable brain is as compared to an incapacitated brain. You want people who understand trust-based planning. You know, we're not always looking for a will-based plan when we're talking about these more complicated potential issues. So it's just really important to do your research. Word of mouth is always best. If you know somebody who had this person as their attorney, ask them, did they have a good experience? Was it done timely? Was there a process in place? We want to see systems. We want to see systemization. We want to know that this person is tried and tested. Did they litigate? What do they do if something comes up and has to be litigated? You know, all that good stuff. So it's hard to pick a good attorney. It is. And usually the best resources for other attorneys are other attorneys or CPAs or financial advisors or, you know, people at facilities. They know the good elder law attorneys that are out there. So using those resources to pick your person is probably the best way to pick an attorney.
Amazing. And definitely a parallel in the healthcare system. If you need a surgeon, right? The anesthesiologists and other surgeons will be able to tell you the real scoop. So,
exactly. Yeah,
it is the way it is. So you have an abundance of resources that I want people to know how to tap into. All the links, including the careful link that you gave, will be in the show details, but where can people find you, your webinars, and your YouTube?
Yeah. So our YouTube channel, if you search the Miller Elder Law Firm, that our YouTube channel comes up. We have so many videos on that channel. There should be any topic that you're looking for that we've talked about or touched on tonight or today. So yeah, like the interoception, I just did a big video on interoception. That's out there now too. We even go through an exercise during that video to help you kind of connect with it. You know, we also have a lot of the brain researchers that we've taken long videos of, and they're on our YouTube channel as well. So it just gets updated all the time. Our webinars, I think, are about to launch on our website. Our website is themillerelderlawfirm.com. You can check there. There's also links to our YouTube channel there. We're on LinkedIn. We're on Instagram. For now, we're on TikTok.
I didn't know you were on TikTok. You went adventurous on me.
Yep. But it might be shutting down. But I love TikTok. TikTok.
Interesting.
Great way to interact with people across the United States about these issues. And I've really enjoyed the engagement there. So yeah, we've got TikTok, we've got Instagram, we've got Facebook, we've got it all. There's in all those venues, you're going to find a lot of the same information, a lot of the same videos and content, but you know, whatever it is that you need, the YouTube channel, I would say is probably the easiest thing to access and do searches on.
Amazing. And I love it. I love the ability to utilize the resources and then use that information to decide if you're the right fit. And I love the connection to intuition. I oftentimes have this conversation with my own clients. Like, does this feel like a good fit? Because what I can list to you as pros and cons is so much less significant than whether or not you feel aligned. And so let's just not be analytical about this. We made a good initial decision getting the appointment. Now you decide if this feels like a good fit energetically. So I'm fully on board with that. And I appreciate all the work that you do. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you, Claudia.
We went
you.
Peace to fear back to peace. And I feel already more at ease.
Excellent.
Thank you so much, Shannon. A huge thank you to Shannon. What a robust and packed episode we just had. I think this is one to save and listen to again. I feel like every time I listen to Shannon speak, I learn something new, I process something new, and we all need to know this, whether it's for our own parents, our grandparents, loved ones, friends. It's just one of those important messages that impacts all of us. So thank you again, Shannon, and for all of you. Thank you for listening to the Years of Minding Wellness. And please stay tuned because the new rebrand is coming and I'm so excited. I will see you here again very, very soon.